And welcome back to another episode of East in the Arena, a place where we talk to East members about the unique things they do, why they do them, and how. Jeremy Levin here, and this last January at the 2024 East Scientific Assembly, we had the amazing opportunity to host live recordings of different East members and talk shop about their centers, their works, and their passions. Over the coming year, we're going to be sharing those experiences and those recordings. On this episode of In the Arena, we delved into the nuts and bolts of creating a national trauma system from the ground up and spoke with Dr. Hassan Mashbari about the world-class trauma system he is helping to build in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
So my name is Hassan Mashbari, born and raised in the south side of Saudi Arabia in 1985. I just have to say that out loud.
Good year.
I had actually 8 brothers, 2 sisters, so a big family. Graduated from high school. We didn't have med school in the region. And luckily enough, one of the big universities opened a branch in the south side. So for the first 4 years, we were under a different university, but my class was 23 med students. We were the big class. Now we have almost around 250 students in a batch,
Austin then came to the U.S. and took his USMLEs, then matched into a preliminary surgical spot at the University of Illinois in Chicago. But before seeing the light of trauma and acute care surgery, he thought about an alternative career path in vascular surgery.
And I started attending the monthly vascular meetings. And at the end of my PGY2, I started doing, you know, general surgery case, and you would rotate in trauma as a second year. So when I rotated as a trauma in the second year, I started noticing it was like, it's a perfect recipe, is that what I defined as the perfect surgeon is that I take care of my patient. You know, I don't even need to take care of them in the ER, but I actually get involved in the pre-hospital, take care of them from the ER, OR, ICU. I still love vascular, so I can do vascular in very young, healthy vessels, and I can tie them. It was like, oh, it was. You can cut that out, what I said. Okay, no, but if the worst scenario, but did that, then I matched for categorical. So I did 6 years at University of Illinois Chicago, moved to MGH Boston, did my 2 years of trauma and acute care.
And since 2021, he's been back home in the south side of Saudi Arabia.
Currently, I'm an assistant professor at the Jazz University, the same university I graduated from. Work at the general surgery residency program director for the last 2 years, also the regional trauma director, and also the deputy of the national trauma system in the country of Saudi.
Did you know you wanted to go back to Saudi to practice when you were done?
Longtime listeners will know that voice, Sean Murley.
What in your training did you really focus on to take back with you?
When I matched at MGH, I was very clear from the beginning that these are the things that I want to learn during these 2 years. One of them is that I want to be ATOM asset and ATLS course director. So within 2 years, I made that done because there is no ATLS course directors in the back. So I was able to help my people by in that. And then I shadowed the trauma director for all their administrative meetings. So I did that and I start communicating 1 year before I go back home with the people back there. Hey, I'm coming back. What's going on? What do I need to learn before I go and all that thing? So when I went back home, it was easy transition because, you know, that was not built of, you know, when I went back home and I started connecting, it was like a 5 years of just putting one step at a time just to make it easy. And that's why within 2 years and a half, we were able to reach this. And I think because of the years of trying.
When you were doing your education, just learning trauma surgery.
There's another one of our hosts, Mike Radomski.
And learning critical care during your fellowship, that you also were trying to learn how to be a trauma medical director at the same time. That's what it sounds like. I think that it's incredibly insightful just to even know to ask that question. Hey, can you teach me how to set up a trauma center and how to set up an entire trauma system? Because that was just not even on my radar.
And finally, our last host, Andrea Soros.
Can you tell us a little bit about the trauma system in Saudi Arabia and kind of what's been done to sort of develop that?
The priorities were different. So, which is, I understand, there was like the stroke, acute coronary syndrome was in the top 2 things, and then chronic non-surgical disease like diabetes and hypertension as well. That. Then the vision of 2030 came. So one of the 4 corners of the vision 2030 is road safety. And under the road safety came in the trauma as a trauma system. And that's where, when it became one of the pillars of the vision transformation, that's when we got our umbrella to implement. So then and there, they came back to the same guy. I was like, hey, you know, we talked a few years ago about trauma. Can we still do that? And it's like, and that was the opening of the creating the trauma pathway. And the pathway mean is that if a trauma happened at this particular area, we need to find a way to where this patient should go, which hospital they should go to, and can we follow that with a KPI
or a key performance indicator
during that pathway or the trip. The Red Crescent.
And Red Crescent is?
Is the AMS.
EMS system.
Yes, that's what we have. It's a governmental-based system. Is that I pick you, take you to the nearest hospital. So it's all of a sudden we have to challenge this new thing, which is we have to look back and change the entire thing, not only the trauma pathway, but actually sit down with Red Crescent and change that.
Did you guys already have like particular hospitals that were specialized in trauma, or was that developed at the same time?
Currently, the hospitals accept trauma regardless. We don't have a particular designation. Then there's something called clusters.
Or a geographic region containing a certain distribution of people.
And within that cluster will provide to the people, you know, whatever the trauma, cancer care, whatever within that. And in that cluster, now start recognizing that what used to happen is that this patient go to the nearest hospital, that hospital transfer this patient to other hospital, then that hospital transfer the patient to the third or fourth hospital. So by the time you get to the proper designated, for example, the only neurosurgery center, it's already 8 to 12 hours. So the morbidity was bad. But also, in the same time, we didn't have a particular KPI that we are following.
So Hassan and his colleagues quickly figured out that they can't just go and build 25 new trauma centers or completely remake a new system. Instead, they had to rework the existing system of clusters to ensure that their patients were triaged and managed appropriately.
Every cluster should have their own, which is level 1, which is level 2, which is level 3. Then what exactly we need to make level 1, level 2, level 3? And we decided that we cannot do the 5 levels in the US. There's no way we can do 5 levels. And number 2 is that cannot also do the same exact requirement, because in level 2, for example, you have to have a neurosurgery. We don't have neurosurgeon. Like in our region, there's only one hospital has a neurosurgeon. So should I just say this is the only level 2? So we end up changing the criteria to whatever fits our country.
They looked at other trauma centers worldwide and drew inspiration from what worked well there, adapting it to the needs of Saudi Arabia.
There is the Canadian system, the UK system, and the US system. So like the Orange Book. We brought in those 4 different systems, created what we need, try to find a body that can make it obligatory. So starting from 2024, next year, every hospital that accept trauma, you have to have what we wrote in the blueprint as part of the trauma. If you're gonna be level 2, that's the only way to make it to be done.
We've talked before on prior episodes of In the Arena that the infrastructure of the building can dictate how care is conducted. For Hassan and his colleagues on a national level, this starts in the pre-hospital setting.
Can you tell us a little bit about working with Crescent and sort of changing their systems and processes from going to like the nearest to the like a directed?
Currently, the president of Red Crescent is an actual trauma surgeon.
Oh, nice.
Awesome. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. That helps. Yeah.
So what we end up doing is a lot of meetings happen that we have to incorporate them. So part of now every regional committee, part of the representations is a Red Crescent representative. So what we end up doing, we actually visit them. We show them what the trauma pathway. We told them, you guys are not alone, because one of the things they were worried about is that I don't want to take this patient to that hospital and then someone died or something. I'm taking responsibilities.
Austin and his colleagues created a pathway that made EMS feel supported and part of a greater team.
We created kind of an easy pathway for them in which they pick up the patient. There's just few information. There's a number they're going to call. The RCC will connect them according to whatever we told them. And they will say, we need this to level 2. So they're going to look, you guys are here. The nearest level 2 is this hospital. Because one of the KPIs we gave them is actually how much percentage of patient went to the proper designated hospitals. We met them. We assured them that this is a part of, you guys are not going to be kind of punished or penalized for that. And these are the new KPIs. Look, so when they start recognizing that and they actually start noticing that other clusters are doing it, defenses went down and they started becoming part of the decision.
Dang. You got to develop the ambulance system to go to the correct hospital. You got to make sure that the hospitals have the correct everything to deal with that. Personnel staff, yeah, everything like that. And then developing and training trauma surgeons. So can you speak to that a little bit?
2017, when the fellowship started, it's in the capital. It's covering, it's expanded now, covering 5 different hospitals. They take 4 fellows a year. It's a 2-year program, doesn't include ICU. The product of that, now like they're in the South region, not only my region, there's other regions. The only trauma surgeons there are the product of the fellowship. And part of what he look into, and actually part of accepting you, is that you are in a, not a main central, you're actually coming from an area that does not have a trauma
like an underserved
surgeons.
Area.
Yes. And that's part of the selection criteria in the fellowships. And it's becoming recognized. People in the beginning did not understand what trauma and why do I need trauma surgeons. I'm a trauma surgeon. And when we start...
General surgery fast.
Exactly. Well, yeah. And I think with the trauma pathway, people start really recognizing what we do bring to the table. And that's what we're trying to do, to make the trauma leads in these particular 20 clusters are trauma surgeons. Unfortunately, we still don't have enough 20 trauma surgeons to cover these clusters because their clusters has no trauma surgeon. So general surgeons will get trained and we provide them with supervision. But last week we graduated 3. Next year we're going to graduate 4 and new 4 got accepted. So it's a good, and there's a plan in expanding that to another body and another to have at least 7 to 8 fellows graduating a year.
What about the trauma nurses? Here, a lot of the nursing staff has to be trauma trained. There's societies like STN and things like that. Are you guys expanding at that as well? Or has that been a point of penetration or resistance?
It's not a mandatory to all the people to get. So certain people have to have an active ATLS. The problem is we did not properly reach out, branch it properly in the nursing thing. So what we are currently doing, it's mostly kind of center-based, their own educational umbrella, is that, okay, let's train the ER nurses to not a particular formal mandatory courses, but it's a locally effort into training their own nurses. So what we notice and actually trying to solve it is, first, have the nurses as part of the table. So now part of the regional trauma committee is actually the head of the nursing of the entire region. He's in the table, he or she, as part of the trauma committee management. And also the head of education of the entire region is part of the trauma committee. So you have head of blood bank, representative from Red Crescent, representative from public safety, actually traffic, as part of the team now, who are not physicians, but they're actually start understanding and they can answer questions for us. We have the head of radiology because we want them to make sure that every trauma patient should get a contrast without waiting for creatinine and BUN, because that was a whole challenge. Oh my God, just to get that pass by. That, no, I'm waiting for BUN and creatinine. The patient is dying. I'm not
sure
going to like,
have
no.
A podcast about
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah. Reference to trauma cast episode. Trauma.
Yeah, yes. By putting them part of the solution. By putting them part of the trauma committee. I think we still have a lot of things to do. So for example, it's in our region, we went to just basically creating our own nursing training because we want it to be free. I have to be realistic to be able to get the budget for that, to be able to get to force the people to pay. So like, no, so we have to have something that is free and we can actually give it as many as we can, training all the nurses, especially the ER and ICU, because usually the ICU are the backup for the ER.
I'm curious about, is there any pushback from the general surgeon community where they've been doing trauma surgery, right? They've been doing it. And now this new body's coming and saying, thank you for your service. Here's a trauma surgeon to do this job better. Like that's the leverage you provide. We are trained in this.
So for example, big hospitals, they have almost subdivisions in the general surgery. And those hospitals with the bigger, they end up creating kind of acute care surgery trauma service. And they actually, most of all, they don't want to deal with trauma. Yeah.
It's the opposite
like,
problem.
Thank you guys for doing that yeah. and being yeah. in-house call and I need to do my elective case.
But the cohorting of patients into primary trauma services are really only happening at the largest institutions. And these represent a minority of institutions across the country.
The majority of the general hospitals are, you have just one general surgery service. that unfortunately, if you're on call, you take care of trauma patient as well. And those are the places that you have to incorporate the general surgeons. So for example, I'm the only trauma surgeon in the South Side. So I went to the level one, I work currently there. And I cannot be on call every day. I cannot have my own service. I cannot, you know, wait to recruit four other traumas.
Yeah. You can't?
I can't.
There's a lot that you've already done. Yeah.
So you have to work with the general surgeons there. I think in the future, level one, I think those are the places that you should really start with, having their own trauma units by redistributing the service. I'd rather have a separate trauma service in the level one only, but have at least one or trauma surgeon or two that take calls like anyone else, but they're the responsible body for, you know, quality control and all of that things. And I think that's what it's going to be in. Every cluster has their own different experience. I got a pushback from the general surgeon because I'm trying to bring is like, okay, all the trauma patient got a trauma code activation within the first 24 hours going to be admitted under general surgery service. And instead of lingering in the ER to be fighting between ortho and neurosurgery, who should take that patient? ER love me now. They come, they shake my hand, give me hugs all the time. Yeah. Ortho are happy. General surgery not happy. And it was like, you're adding us a lot of burden. You're doing this to us. And it's like, well, here's, you know, so it took a while. And I'm implementing that change and the importance into the general surgery residents and the fellows and the importance of that. And I think it's kind of a matter of time. I think all the people who started trauma system here went through way worse. And the good thing that I really made my life easy is when I came back home, I started contacting my friends in the other city. So I did not create protocols from scratch. I literally talked to the people in cluster A, 2, 3, 4, 5, and that was part of I was able to convince the people is that I tell them, we are not the first people. Look, Riyadh did this. Other hospitals in Mecca did this. The other hospital in Jeddah. So I'm not inventing, bringing something new. I think that put people in ease and helped my part.
It sounds like there wasn't like a good way of tracking outcomes from things like trauma before this whole push started. Have you developed your own way of tracking outcomes or using TQIP type system or like what are you using?
We looked into all these fours and we came up with 15 KPIs that we need to look into. Okay, should we start with these 15? It's like, there's no way we can start with these 15. So we downgrade them into, for the time being, phase one, we're just only going to look into three. So number one is the transfer. How long is we needed to less than 4 hours? And that's from the time you put in the system transfer to actual landing in the ER at the other hospitals. How many percentage less than 4 hours? The second KPI is how many percentage of the patient got calculated their ISS score, because we start correlating that into their mortality. And the percentage of ER mortality from trauma, not the 24, not the 30 days. Now we are looking into, we are collecting these information from all the level one across the country, these three KPIs. And we already have other KPIs we're going to look, but we don't want to overlook all of a sudden you implement 15 KPI, all of a sudden you start having that problem. So we started with these three, and we actually now looking into, once we go to level expansion, level two, she's doing now, which KPIs we need to pick from them.
You know, here we have mandatory, for example, trauma committee meetings, mandatory trauma peer review processes and things like that that we have to go through. Are those things that you had to newly implement there, or are those things not being implemented, or were they already being implemented in some other capacity and you had to adapt it?
So this is the first body for trauma. So there's no mandatory processes that we go through. I think what we are creating now is through the body, which is called Sibahi, the verification process, is I think they're going to start looking into, okay, I'm coming to verify you. Do you guys have the seven things that you should have? Which is number one, a trauma committee that you guys meeting every month. You have a report for that. That you have trauma activation criteria policy, you have massive transfusion protocol, you have radiology trauma policy, you have lab trauma policy, you have hospital admission trauma policy. That is going to end up happening in future by to be able to be really named as a level one or level two, you have to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 thick. And what we are trying to figure out exactly is not going to be, maybe I don't want to be a level two. I just don't want to know. Unfortunately, it's because it's a government-based hospitals. you guys gonna have to meet up certain standards, because these are free charge, you know, it's a service for all. It's a minimum mandatory level of care. It's gonna be mandatory. Is that gonna be implemented to private sectors and everything? That's another time, another discussion.
Now, this wouldn't be an In the Arena episode if we didn't get into the how of Hassan's endeavors. And while coming up with a succinct list of do's and don'ts for building a national trauma system is dubious, Hassan has some general bits of advice which I think apply on both national and local levels.
First of all, which system we want to do? Which are the resources we want to take? And we decided on this from these four. Then decide on what level, how many levels we need to decide. So say three.
Decide if you want to make it mandatory or not.
Okay, let's find a governing body. So Sibahi and okay, we're going to make that.
And then what policies do you want in place for patient care?
Okay, all right, let's talk to Red Crescent, because that's the only currently official governmental transportation of patients. Get them involved. What we hope in the future is going to be is, number one, expanding to the level two. By expanding to level two and level three, it is now we can really see the transportation system and looking into, are we doing a good job? How are we going to make that happen? So I think having that, plus collecting data not only from the level one as we're doing right now, but actually from level one, level two, level three, and see how are we doing, and actually look into expanding the KPIs from three to more, and which KPIs we need to pick, and then training programs, what we want to create as a nationally training programs to, and how we're going to even train the people, and is it going to be locally, is it going to be nationally, what should we make it mandatory,
and then form an accrediting body that can visit sites and ensure that they have the support they need and quality care is being conducted.
Okay, we have a problem at this hospital. Look at the numbers. They're red. That team of group of people gonna go, sit down with the surgeon, look at the data, and provide a feedback. I think it's gonna take a while. So once we finish with the level two, level three, and make sure they're really collecting the three data, the three KBIs properly, and Red Crescent got incorporated, then we should sit down and figure out what exactly we should prioritize.
So I'll ask a question. In two different ways, what is something unique to Saudi Arabia with regards to the trauma system that you found as you were developing it that doesn't happen anywhere else in the world? Or maybe a unique part of your trauma system that you developed that you had to build from scratch as opposed to have guidance from other places?
Number one, the healthcare system is different. So it's a free-for-all in the Ministry of Health body, because the trauma system became governmental-based body that gave it a strong power to actually have a higher chance of succeeding. You really can implement it on every hospital under the Ministry of Health, because now you don't have to deal with the, you know, insurances and have them saying, I'm not doing it in this hospital, I apologize. They're like, no, I'm sorry, you don't have a question. Yeah, I think the future of the change is actually great, because one of the main important changes happened in Saudi is the Ministry of Health was the one providing the care at the hospitals, supervising and evaluating the care and financially supporting that. So they say, is like, you know, look, I'm doing the work and I'm evaluating myself. So they start recognizing, you know what, I think that should be separate. So they actually, the Ministry of Health, these three jobs, actually, instead of being done by one ministry, is actually split into three different bodies. And that's a whole new change for the first time happened. So the health holding company, which is a government and government owned company, is going to be the one running the hospitals. Ministry of Health is going to be only supervising and evaluating. And a third body is going to be providing the money. Now, with this change, I think we can guarantee quality. We can speed and outcomes, because you're not only the one evaluating your work, now actually someone else evaluating the work. So I think that's this change in the three plus the government driven plus the one healthcare system, I think what is unique about Saudi.
Well, that's us. Thanks, Hassan, for sharing your experience in crafting the national trauma system for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. East in the Arena is a product of the Educational Resources Committee. If you want to hear more East in the Arena episodes or other East products like the TraumaCast or CareerCast, visit east.org or wherever fine podcasts are found. And we are always looking for feedback and ways to improve. So visit our page on the east.org website and give us that feedback. We want to know your thoughts. This episode was storyboarded, edited, and engineered by Jeremy Levin and co-produced by Sean Murley. We hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you on the next episode of In the Arena.
What was it about the field of trauma? Did you know from really early on, like, I want to be a trauma surgeon, I want to do ICU, all that stuff? Or is that something you discovered over the course of your training?
So I want to do a vascular surgery. That was when I was in R1. And because in my preliminary year, I think it was Stockholm syndrome, because I did 6 months of vascular surgery. I was like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
That's surgery in general. Yeah. I just want to let you know.
Sham is the only one that escaped with that.
Although I have second thoughts sometimes.
The discussion is the opinion of the participating individuals. East does not recommend or endorse and disclaims all liability relating to any particular products, procedures, opinions, or other information presented to or referred by through this podcast, including but not limited to the content of any advertisement, except for any statements specifically identified as expressing a policy or position officially approved by East.